You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Zany Mystic, also known as Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Dean Schrock, Ph.D. Dr. Schrock served as Director of Mind-Body Medicine for a group of 40 cancer centers. There, he developed a program which he taught to thousands of cancer patients and to their families. His first book, Doctor's Orders, Go Fishing, details the insights gained while teaching his program. Dr. Schrock's research clearly demonstrates that you can affect survival with cancer with the approach he calls go fishing. This familiar phrase is his way of stressing the importance of the will to live. His research and experience show that love is an energy, and when experienced, puts us most in harmony with our sense of oneness. This is the core belief of all major religious and philosophical systems. The concept that we are one with everything is supported by current research in quantum physics and the evidence that connecting all of physical reality is a matrix of harmony and order. His new book, Why Love Heals, Mind, Body, Spirit Medicine, explores these unifying principles in greater depth, making connections which all lead back to the same basic conclusion, love heals. Let's find out more about these ideas by welcoming Dr. Schrock to the show now. Hi, Dr. Schrock. How are you?
Hi, okay, thanks. It's nice to be a guest on the show.
Wonderful. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed the many different sources that you have woven into your new book. Did you have fun writing it?
You know, I did, but it's still a challenge. The perfectionist part of me wants to make sure that I cover the topic properly and thoroughly. And while I was driven because of my research to really look at how could this possibly be true, how could love really affect survival with cancer? But, you know, quantum physics was a new field to me. My background is really psychology, and I worked in mind-body medicine. But I did a lot of study personally into quantum physics, which helped me considerably. And initially, I have to say that I struggled with it a little, but one writer in particular, Lynn McTaggart, and a personal friend, James Barrett, have been instrumental in helping make sense of all of this. So to answer your question, it's a yes and no answer. I loved being able to make a point and find supporting evidence for why love heals, but it took me a couple of years to put that together.
Well, I do understand the process. I did my first book last year, and it was a process indeed. It was kind of like I had a team of people that were driving me to do it. And putting, you know, kind of putting ideas and thoughts and rearranging them. And that part was kind of fun and easy, but it was also like pulling teeth.
Yeah.
Now, your work was with cancer patients, but the principles that you outline in your book would equally apply to all disease and terminal illness. Is that true?
I would agree, yes. In fact, I was director of mind-body medicine for this large group of cancer centers, which is where I was fortunate to be able to work with them and help them and then do this research. But I believe very clearly that the will to live, or what I call going fishing, or the idea of feeling loved and cared for, affects everything, period.
Mm-hmm.
And my preference, of course, is that people think in terms of preventive medicine to take care of themselves before they get sick.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no question in my mind and in my experience that there are things you can do very much to help yourself get well or stay well.
I totally agree with you, and I hope you don't mind that I segue into a story that kind of reiterates what you just said. A landlord to a tenant who had come down with some kind of cold or flu bug, And he went to the doctor, and the doctor told him that he had AIDS and had about a week to live. And he had been fine up until that point. And he came home dragging himself into the bed. He went to bed, and he didn't get out of bed ever. He basically, after about 2 weeks, he shipped himself home, and within a couple of weeks after that, he was dead. And I had I've had other friends who, you know, fought and struggled and kept a positive outlook and, you know, survived for quite a long time. And I guess I'm a good example of that, having been HIV positive for over 25 years. So, you know, there I think keeping a positive attitude is very important, and your belief system is important too.
Yes, they are extremely important, as are a number of factors. You know, within what we call wellness and in the research in public health and in preventive medicine, three factors stand out in particular: stress, nutrition, and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And if those are addressed well in your life, largely you're going to be pretty healthy, but it's a lot easier said than done. We've learned a lot of very bad habits in all of those areas. And then I guess, because I can go so much more in depth than I do in my second book in particular, that, you know, life really serves the purpose of learning to love more fully, and the contrast as a term, you know, negative as we tend to think of it, is actually part of the experience that we have agreed to by coming into this experience to understand love more fully.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So illness, even though I am not championing illness or depression or, you know, negative states, I believe that there's a way to embrace them that can also be healthy and help us grow spiritually. But in terms of, you know, what it really takes to be well, I think that a lot of us just have to make some major modifications in our lifestyle, and it's a lot easier said than done to change your diet or to, you know, do regular exercise or to apply stress management. It's not like this is new and we haven't heard about it, but in my experience, as I tend to teach people, the good news is this stuff really works. The
yeah.
bad news is you have to do it.
Right, right.
It isn't like a magic bullet, you know, give me this pill, you know, surgically remove it, and then I can just be well.
Right, right. Now, how do we actually utilize the power of love for healing ourselves and others?
Well, I have two easy answers, but again, they're not necessarily something, they still require a certain discipline in a way.
Mm.
But one is having fun. My first book was really about follow your bliss, the idea of when you're busy doing what you like to do, you tend to forget your aches and pains. Well, when you're busy doing what you like to do, from a metaphysical perspective, we know that literally there's less resistance to the life force energy that flows through the body, whether we call it the quantum field or life force or chi.
Right.
So very key is when you are experiencing joy or following your bliss, you're allowing for the natural flow of that life-giving energy. So one, go fishing. I really mean that. I'm quite serious about that.
I like that one.
Good. Yeah, it's like a, I say a blessing, and well, it's, how do I normally say it? It's like, well, I'm forgetting the term right now that I say so consistently, a license to steal. You know, that, can you imagine going to your doctor, as, or believe me, if you had come into our cancer centers, we really did tell you to do this. We would send home people home with prescriptions to do whatever they told us they really loved to do. We would actually prescribe it for them.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the other thing is meditation or any focused attention kind of technique where it allows you to access a whole other reality in terms of how we understand or what we call reality. And a great story that I tell in my book, Why Love Heals, is about the neuroanatomist, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor.
Oh, that's
and
a
her
one?
Book, My Stroke of Insight.
Oh, that's a remarkable story. Keep going.
Yeah. And it's not like this is, we haven't heard this before, but I think because she is a brain scientist.
Yes.
And she had a stroke, then she experienced firsthand what it was like to have her, the left hemisphere of her brain compromised.
Right.
And then when that happened, and now she was operating pretty much primarily from her right hemisphere, she knew a whole different reality. The left brain is one that categorizes and judges and criticizes and is important in terms of our being able to analyze and reason and so forth. But the right brain just sees everything in terms of unity and a flow and a bliss, but, you know, lots of terms and ways that mystical experiences have been explained.
Mm-hmm.
So by learning to quiet the left logical brain and operate from the right, or however we say when you meditate and you otherwise calm your logical mind, in fact, a very practical benefit of meditation alone is just to stop habitual worrying.
Right, right.
That, so meditation is just a wonderful way, and that's, I'm sure, why it's this ages-old technique, more than a technique. It's simply the way to access the truth of who you really are in a much, much greater reality than we think of, that we think we understand with our physical senses.
Oh, I totally agree. And it seems that the left side of the brain actually is kind of a damper or hindrance to emotions like compassion, love, bliss, and intuition.
Yeah, in fact, I would say it pretty much is going to keep you from truly feeling that way. It just operates that differently. You will never know nirvana
mm-hmm.
with your left brain dominating.
Right. You might get to be a CEO of Citicorp, something like that. But that would require a little larceny, too. Larceny whipsnade. So, what I wanted to ask you about was, what if, when we talk about, what happens if the person who is ill has repressed or subconscious self-loathing or feelings of inferiority? In other words, if somebody reads your book and they start to try to practice the self-love, and yet there's a subterranean layer that they haven't addressed yet or unaware of, does that cancel their workout?
I don't know that I would say it would cancel it, but it's certainly going to hinder it.
Mm.
And this is where I would strongly recommend a practice of mindfulness meditation, or there are simply therapy approaches that will mount the same thing, but it's about empathizing with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as I understand it, in the spiritual dimension where we normally reside, there are not negative emotions as we can experience them here. And so it's a unique opportunity then to know more fully what love is by experiencing what it isn't.
Mm.
And a very practical approach to, you know, the self-loathing or the low self-esteem is to simply be in touch with that part, the part that isn't feeling safe and loved, and love it. You know, a practical example would be if you had a best friend who really was down and out. Ideally, you would just truly be there for your friend. You wouldn't try to analyze him or her or fix her. You would just be there and in some way convey, even if you didn't know what to do, you know, somehow, some way, we're going to get through this, and I'm going to be here with you, you know, whatever it takes.
Absolutely.
Do this for yourself. Love yourself.
Yes.
And so in this meditative or focused state, you simply allow yourself to access that part of you that is feeling this, because it's not the core of who you are, but a part of you really is feeling like that. Honor it, love it, accept it. And in that process of being mindful in that way, it actually transforms itself. It's kind of remarkable that way, and I really call it the perfect act of loving yourself.
Huh. I like that. You worked extensively with cancer patients. Did you see, you must have seen remissions and miracles and things that were beyond, outside the box. Is that accurate?
Yes. Depending, you know, I was able to work with an awful lot of folks, and not all of them applied what I was trying to teach, but you can be certain that I saw some remarkable things, which I talk about in my first book. There are a couple of excellent examples I give there where I even ended up, this is going to sound horrible on the surface, so God forgive me at first.
Okay.
But this doctor bet me $100 that this patient wasn't going to live because I was working with him and I knew that he was doing what he needed to do. And this doctor was certain he actually had died the last time he had seen him.
Huh.
Before I went to see him in the hospital, he really was that bad, and
wow,
he really was expected to die.
Uh-huh.
But that same weekend, I saw him on a Friday, he got discharged to home and recovered so well. And then when I saw this physician the following Monday in another hospital, and I mentioned to him, you know, did you know that this fellow was really doing a whole lot better, and he was discharged to home, and he got mad at me.
Oh, really?
Because that couldn't be true. He knew that this fellow should be dead. And he called the hospital to check, and sure, of course, the fellow had been discharged. And that's when he bet me $100 that the guy wouldn't live.
He maybe was equally as mad at having to pay you the $100.
No, actually, in the end, believe me, he was glad. He actually remembered. Another interesting part of the story is that he made me give him 30 days. You know, even though the guy should be dead,
uh-huh,
in order to make this $100 bet, he said, but you've got to give me 30 days.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I really went out on a limb, but I really believed I knew what I was doing, and I gave the $100 to the fella. You know, I didn't keep this $100, but I wanted to make a point, and unfortunately, the physician didn't ask, you know, exactly what I did and why the fella was able to still live. But, yeah, that's a really interesting story, partly because of the, you know, the zany part where we're actually betting $100 on a patient's life.
Well, it sounds as if his mind wasn't open and his belief system was keeping him from progressing any further. Once you think you know something, you're closed off to any other solutions to healing.
Well, that's certainly in terms of the way I understand intuition or the creative process is that, right, if your mind is closed or too set, you literally, in fact, close yourself off from getting that insight. I was remembering another story, too, where this fellow, when I first met him, and honestly, I didn't care normally to know a patient's prognosis because I knew how much it can color them the way you interact with them.
Yeah, exactly.
But in this case, I truly did know that the fellow was in bad shape and he wasn't supposed to live 2 months. And I was there at this cancer center and encouraging patients to attend the classes that I taught around the will to live and stress management and so forth. And I was certain he wouldn't come in because he was in a lot of pain. He was in a wheelchair. And I was really surprised that evening when he actually did come into class. And then when I was talking about guided imagery, the idea that you could use your imagination or your thought or deliberate intention to literally create an improved condition in your body, the way your immune system functions or to manage pain. He got so mad at me, and he said, he leaned forward and said, you mean to tell me that, you know, and then they tended to say like, oh, you know, he can imagine his pain away. He was mad at me. and I remember how I was surprised when a number of other patients, I didn't have to respond to him, they told him stories or examples or whatever, and I thought, oh, boy. So, you know, you do what you can. And then I thought, well, surely I'll never see him again. He came back to all six classes.
Wow.
Now, here's the deal. You know, I'm encouraging people to go fishing and do what they love, whatever brings them the greatest joy. I want them to live like they're going to live.
Uh-huh.
Well, now, at this point, he wasn't expected to live maybe 2 more weeks based on his original prognosis when I met him. And he said to me, I want to buy a $10,000 boat. What should I do? And so I didn't tell him what he should do. I never would.
Right, right.
But, you know, again, my message is largely live like you're going to live. And,
right,
you know, how do you want to spend the time you have left? Any way you look at it. And so the interesting part of this story is he and his wife went out and bought that boat. And he lived for the rest of that year for several more months. And they said they had the best summer of their lives.
Wow.
And they literally buried him with his tape recorder and my guided imagery tape that he took everywhere and listened to every day.
My goodness. That's
yeah,
quite a wonderful story.
Yeah. So I was fortunate to be able to work with some people who I know made a difference and took advantage of other things they could do to complement their medical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I don't want to call them miracles as much as there are other things we can do that are beyond what is taught in medical school.
Yeah.
That make a huge difference, and nothing bigger and more important than love.
Yeah,
that was just a huge awakening for me to look into quantum physics and other spiritual perspectives beyond a lot of other research to understand why love really does heal.
I was talking to a friend of mine about talking to plants and stuff, and I was surprised to find some documentation in your book. I'm looking trying to find that part with my notes, where the morphogenetic fields link animals to humans.
Rupert Sheldrake.
That's right. Do you want to speak about that a little bit?
Sure. Rupert Sheldrake, actually, I read about initially when I was in graduate school a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his first book was titled A New Science of Life. And I was so intrigued by it, I read the whole book in one evening. It was just one of those things I couldn't put down. And it was giving a lot of credence to my primary interest of guided imagery. That was my doctoral dissertation.
Oh.
But the idea is that whenever we have a thought, because quantum physics research is really quite clear that consciousness creates, that if we look at the most fundamental makeup of matter as such, it really doesn't even have form. We talk about it's a particle or a wave.
Right.
It's actually formless.
Mm-hmm.
But when you introduce consciousness, it now takes form and becomes the particle. And so Rupert Sheldrake talked about these morphogenetic fields where when people have a thought, or if there were a lot of people thinking the same thing, they create a field like a blueprint that then attracts the appropriate matter necessary to fill it in. But we have the power with our thought to create these fields, or otherwise these fields underlie whatever form. And so even within our bodies, there is another scientist, his name was Harold Saxton Burr, called them life fields. But there truly are energy fields that, that comprises the universe, but even within our bodies that determine, the shape or the characteristics of our body.
Interesting. You mentioned also the power of mind and emotions as brought forth by Dr. Bruce Lipton, and it's called epigenetics?
Yes.
Well, what is that?
Well, it looks at factors that can affect genetic expression. You know, we all have DNA and genetic material that we pretty much have believed then determines all of our physiology. Well, what epigenetics has determined is that your beliefs and your diet in particular, but I'm certain also, I just don't know as much about exercise, but they determine which genes actually get expressed. You have a lot of genes that don't get expressed except for very healthy reasons or for very unhealthy reasons. There's even what they call an oncogene related to oncology and cancer. So we have sometimes a predisposition for a particular illness or disease process. And whenever we don't eat properly or don't manage stress properly, then that switch gets turned on and can express and affect a malignancy. So in epigenetics, Bruce, as a cell biologist, was able to do the research and determine that one's beliefs literally affected the expression and structure of the DNA. And it was the environment that determined, how it was received by the cell membrane that determined the health and the expression of the gene.
Interesting.
Yeah, see, we all have hundreds of bacteria and viruses in our body all the time, so why aren't we always sick? And we have an immune system. We have so much that is also geared to keep us well. But when we do things to break down the cell structure, then we create an environment where disease can thrive.
Uh-huh.
So the key to me is to do things to keep us healthy. And I remember enjoying this part of teaching cancer patients, although I was mad initially that I was the one telling them because they should have been told this by someone other than me.
Right, right.
But the idea is that cancer cells are weak cells biologically. And I don't know that any cancer patient I had worked with knew that. Well, they should know that because their image of cancer is that if you get cancer, it's awful. Except for AIDS, there's nothing that still scares people more than being diagnosed with cancer.
Right.
And they think, obviously, then their body's not strong enough to fight it.
Right.
Well, the fact is that they've had these cells in their bodies all their life.
Right.
Why didn't they always have cancer? When your immune system is strong enough, in fact, you're not going to have that disease. So we need to teach people to do things to keep their immune system strong or to get them strong. And that's the way to affect an illness or to keep people well, not to wait till they get sick and then try to do something. It doesn't mean that we don't have approaches that can help them after the fact, but nothing's going to help them more unless it's a really acute, serious situation than stress management, nutrition, and exercise beyond, and I will always come back now to feeling loved and cared for, you know, by accessing things that are part of love, like joy, or meditating where you truly do connect with your own divine source, which is only love, your own true self, which is love.
Mm-hmm. And following your bliss, as you mentioned, and being happy, because so many of us find ourselves going down a path that's a dead-end street, and there's a brick wall there. Well, we're going to hit it sooner or later, and sometimes, you know, working jobs we don't like or relationships we don't care for and shouldn't be in and know better, we're just allowing ourselves to kind of trudge along because it's familiar. But really, it's important to take those actions that bring us happiness, and if we're unhappy, to find out what it is that's making us unhappy and take steps to move away from that.
Right. And so I had an exercise, which was the last chapter in my first book, Doctor's Orders Go Fishing, where I had people list their interests and then list their needs, list their values, and then also what they wanted to do for social support or for fun or for nutrition or for exercise or for meditation or, you know, anything regarding their spiritual beliefs. Really look at these areas of your life and what do you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
What makes your heart sing? And then again, that became their prescription. But also it was a way of helping them look at themselves. Who am I? What makes me tick? What makes life worth living? And it's a wonderful exercise to make sure, my opinion, that you do something you love to do as part of your day, like anything else you do in the day, that you commit a certain time, I say arbitrarily at least 1 hour every day to go fishing.
That does sound like fun.
But I would tell you, and it sounds so novel or even Pollyannish when you're talking about something like cancer or AIDS to say that, you know, it is as important as any medication.
Oh,
or
I
other
agree.
But I am entirely serious when I tell you this.
I totally agree. In fact, I have plans to go fishing with a neighbor of mine sometime this year. And it just seems like a wonderful experience to just be in a little boat or by the shore and catching fish and cooking for dinner. It's just such a simple thing. You mentioned the work of one of my previous guests, Robert Schwartz,
yes,
who wrote Your Soul's Plan.
Yeah.
Now, according to him, he has extensive research which demonstrates that as souls, we have pre-birth plans based upon personal growth. How does this come into play with illness and healing as you see it?
Well, it's entirely possible, certainly according to Rob Schwartz and his life experience and his surveys, that we may have chosen to experience some negative experience on purpose. I would say essentially it's unavoidable.
Right.
Metaphysicians refer to the earthly experience as a veil of tears. But there's a book titled A Child of Eternity that I cite in my first book when I'm actually answering the question, did I cause my own illness? Because I ran into that a lot when I'm trying to tell people, well, you know, if you didn't eat properly, you didn't exercise properly, you didn't manage stress properly, that, you know, you can contribute to a disease process. And some people don't like to hear that. They, again, well, it's just, it's hard to accept personal responsibility sometimes.
Right.
So anyhow, in this book, Child of Eternity, the mother of an autistic daughter is the author of the book. And she tells how her daughter was, I forget what degree autistic, but pretty severe, and she was unable to communicate with her daughter, which made it even more distressing for the mother. But at some point, and I forget at what age, or 6, 8 years, or 9 years, finally the child learned what they call facilitative communication through using a keyboard. And she learned how to type and now could communicate with her mother, which was a very exciting, special time that now the mother and the daughter could do this. But the mother goes on to tell the story where within a very short time, months, the daughter begins to type a wisdom way beyond this child, way beyond her mother, and says in very specific terms how the daughter created the conditions within the womb to create the opportunity for her to have autism.
Wow.
For the benefit of teaching her mother patience, for the benefit of being able to teach others about this facilitated way to communicate, so that according to at least this child and the wisdom now coming through her, that she chose, in fact, to be autistic for herself and for her mother specifically, as well as for others to help them.
Wow, that is a fascinating story. And, of course, you probably have heard about the kids, the Indigo kids, since it's now their old hat. They've been here for 20, 30 years now. And the crystalline kids who have special abilities and so on and so forth. And the rainbow kids who seem to be coming in, being born with just a soulful awareness and wisdom that, that far exceeds their parents.
Yeah. Well, of course, I would go, even though what you said is just true, I would say go inside, meditate, ask your dreams. We all can access this. You don't have to be an Indigo child and, you know, have different DNA. Everyone always has had, will always have access to their true self, divine inspiration, simply by learning to go within.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's just that we have become so distracted by life that we have forgotten who we are and how to do that process?
Well, either we've forgotten, to be sure. I literally, it's kind of a joke, but I've created a new diagnostic code for what we call the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistic Manual for All Mental Disorders, and I call it forgotten identity. That the core, positively, malady for people is they have forgotten who they are. We are the quantum field. We are the holy grail. We've been everything we've ever been looking for, and it's within our figurative hearts. We have forgotten that we are part of divine source. We are God here expressing as an aspect of God to learn more fully about who and what we are and what love is more fully by experiencing what it isn't. And so, this is so important. And so I want to tell your listeners to, I have my website now, deanschrock.com, but we're in the process of putting together whyloveheals.com and another called heartfeltintent.com that will be just loaded with information where we will be able to give people, you know, every time I talk, I'm going to record it. Every time I write, I'm going to be able to post it. I now am very committed to making sure this message gets out. And I know, again, in my experience, that a lot of people aren't going to just do this. But on the other hand, I just am compelled to make sure that this message gets out. And by the way, I saw on your website, there was a little promotion about Live H2O coming up in June, or Love H2O coming up in June,
mm-hmm.
which is based in Hawaii, but they're having regional events around the country, actually around the world. And I will be speaking at the Long Beach event in June. And so I don't know where all your listeners are, but if they are at all interested and can get to Long Beach or Hawaii, or otherwise go to the website, you know, Live H2O, and look more closely into how they are organizing this very special event around Professor Emoto's research with water.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So that's what it's all about, Live Love H2O, where literally thousands of people will be gathering at each site, and then otherwise being asked to participate with their thought, with their deliberate intention and water to send loving thoughts and literally transform water, which comprises most of who we are and the universe is.
Right.
So I'm just thought it was nice to see that you had that posted on your website, and I wanted to let you know that I was pleased to be part of, at least I will be a presenter for the Long Beach.
Oh, wonderful.
Event.
Now, not everybody is familiar with Dr. Emoto's work, but it's been in the movie What the Bleep Do We Know Anyway, and he was featured there, and a lot of people have seen some of the videos, but can you just briefly explain to the listeners what his breakthrough work was with water?
What he found was that when you froze water at a specific temperature and it was in a certain crystal form, that when you projected a thought to the water, if it was a more loving thought, literally you projected love or gratitude or appreciation, the crystalline form became this beautiful snowflake-like structure.
Mm-hmm.
But if you projected thoughts like anger or hatred or some negative thought, the photograph they were able to take of the structure looked more like sludge.
Mm-hmm. And as I recall, he would take samples from various water sources, like municipal water, and take a number of samples from them. And then he would write by hand love, and then he would just post it on the jar. Then another one would have hate, and he would just put it on another sample from the same source, and then crystallize them and take pictures. And the difference is absolutely astonishing. The ones that were negative or hateful were completely chaotic and helter-skelterish, and the ones that were positive and uplifting were just magnificent, like just all different snowflake creations, as you said, very beautiful crystals.
Right. Yeah. So, I would love for people to so fully understand that every thought they have literally creates reality one way or another.
Mm-hmm,
but when they do it deliberately, and especially when they get into a more loving, coherent state, like through any deep relaxation practice,
mm-hmm.
you at least double the effectiveness of the thought you then have at that time.
Mm.
Yeah, so everybody, I would guess, on your radio show knows about the law of attraction. It is real
mm-hmm.
that your thoughts literally affect your reality, and you can do it deliberately. That is, you can sit down, get centered, and literally create more of what you would choose to have in your life. You know, the kind of joke is, though, be careful what you pray for. You just might get it.
Yes.
So another very healthy thing to do, honestly, at this time is to also get into this prayerful state and just project the thought, you know, that I fulfill my soul script perfectly and then, you know, let go. But all intention techniques work basically on this idea of truly, just intend it with all of your heart, all of your being, and let go. And I will tell you, you know, it sounds too good to be true, because I initially used to call this Walt Disney. All you have to do is wish upon a star and your dream comes true.
Right.
So the idea of guided imagery, that you could really do this, was offensive to me initially.
Huh.
But I went to study this because I found that in practicing guided imagery, that I, when I was taught it, I changed so many things for myself, from, you know, an allergic condition I had for years. I changed my weight. I changed smoking. I literally changed. I was supposed to have surgery on my knee, and I was able to correct that and the pain I had in less than a week, and never had surgery.
Wow.
And it drove me to study this, where one thing led to another, where it reinforced itself more and more. So this is very, very serious and very important. If people only understood how much power have to affect their lives?
Well, you bring up you're bringing up an interesting point, and what I'm wondering is how do people keep their desire for what they want in life away from the egoic or egotistical desire for having things, in other words, materialism, and maintain a center in being both content with what you have and also learning how to give of ourselves. In other words, so many people use the secret to get things. Isn't there a fine line there that we have to walk?
Well, I would be careful about prescribing what someone should do, because everyone's life is different, life purpose is different.
Well, true.
What I would say is that know that you have the right and the power to use prayer. That's why prayer has been taught forever, because it really does work. I think the key is always balance, but it's not for me to say what the balance should be for you. But, you know, when you really look at your life, there is a great deal of satisfaction that comes from being able to give.
Yeah.
So just search your heart for what makes your heart sing. And when you are doing that, you will never project a healthier energy. This may sound like a digression for a moment, but I remember when 9/11 happened and there were so many emails and messages and whatever going around about how do we respond. And I said, finally, you got to go fishing. And I know how dumb this had to sound to a lot of people. You know, what kind of a response is that? But when you understand that every thought is an energy and creates, do you really want to be putting out thoughts of revenge and hatred and, you know, what an awful lot of what I was seeing and hearing? Or do you want to put out thoughts of love and joy? They create.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more.
So it's important that we learn, I say, to get smart. When you understand this really works, this is how it works, at some point you just get smart.
Right, right.
And you realize, okay, I can affect my condition, and if I keep doing this, you know,
right,
I increase the odds I'm going to have that. And if I, you know, eat better, exercise better, manage my stress better,
right,
go fishing more. And I still want to come back to that and tell you, there's nothing that will help you manage your stress or put things in perspective better than really making time for fun.
Yes.
You know, when I was working with cancer patients, because it was pretty serious stuff, you know, I would ask them, you know, what they want. And in the end, I remember that we kind of concluded if we could have brought it down to this, it was peace of mind. In the end, we're all looking for peace of mind. So I thought about that. And I thought about, okay, when do we have it? How do we get it? And it was so clear to me. It's when you're going fishing. It's when you're doing what you love. You think about this, and I ask your audience to think about this, that you will never have peace of mind more or more often than when you're doing what brings you the greatest joy and meaning in your life.
Yep.
So that's my encouragement for people, is go find your passion and live it.
Yep.
And then there is no way then that you won't be healthier. You won't be projecting a healthier energy out to the universe, which has its own consequences. And then that's when you'll create a natural balance between this give and take as such.
Right.
You'll be doing what you love, but then you'll be giving through whatever it is that is your passion.
Yes. And that seems to be an aspect of connecting or aligning with our soul purpose.
I would say that almost certainly. Yes, but I think that people, sometimes that can be a little heavy for people, or, you know, how do I know what that purpose really is? Of course, we would tell them, again, to meditate, to develop their own intuition, but it's to listen to your heart,
right,
and it's as
right.
simple as what feels right, and what may be right for you may not be right for another.
Absolutely.
But really pay attention to how you feel and what makes your heart sing. Trust that and go with that. But I would so want people to, you know, ask their dreams within a very, very short time. I mean, within a week, if you take this seriously and you ask your dreams for insights, you will get them that
mm-hmm.
will help you in making decisions about what's right for you.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be living up to my name as a zany mystic if I didn't ask you about your thoughts on the Mayan calendar and about your introduction to John. Do you perceive events on the planet shifting into a higher vibration, as so many seem to be speaking about today?
Yes, I want to add a little more to that, but positively, when you just mentioned John, I don't know that your listeners will know that. I'm going to actually back up and give even more information.
Oh,
if that's
good.
Okay. When I was about 30 years old, and I'm more than double that now,
okay.
I had a best friend who could see ghosts. And I have to tell you, except that she was my best friend, I would have totally written her off. This was, you know, just craziness.
Uh-huh.
But it began a gradual interest of mine in looking at paranormal phenomena or mysticism or metaphysics.
Uh-huh.
But when I was 33, I met a man, his name is Ken McCauley, who taught a self-help course and was the first one to teach me about guided imagery and really introduced me to the importance of what he called manifesting love, living love in our life.
Hmm.
And we became instant best friends and went on to become business partners and worked together very closely for 10 years. Well, soon after our friendship began and developed, he had been psychic all of his life. He began to go into a trance state and channel. And I, for every day, for 7 years, spoke to what I call this inner wisdom, or we call them mentors or master teachers,
uh-huh.
every day for 7 years.
Wow.
So that was a unique introduction to, oh, my God, there's a whole lot more going on here. And
yeah.
it was they who suggested I go back to school and get my PhD,
wow.
because they said it would open doors that otherwise wouldn't be open and would help me in now teaching what I knew now I needed to teach.
Wow.
Anyhow, this was this big introduction to when you now mentioned John. And so for your listeners, last year, I guess it was even the year before, I was doing a book signing, and I met a woman there who was a psychic and doing readings as part of helping this store in our little town promote what they do. And it was a little slow, and so she and I got to talking, and she was telling me how she really was a very good psychic, but she couldn't read for herself. Well, I knew better. I knew that something was just blocking that. So I asked her if she'd be willing to trade. I'll show you how you can read for yourself, and you give me a psychic reading. And so every week since then, at least once a week, she and I have met. And at some point, not only now, with my friend Ken McCauley, who I met early on and taught me all this, he's deceased.
Uh-huh.
But now I get to talk with Ken through Sharon all the time.
Wow.
He is now my spirit guide.
Amazing.
Anyhow, Sharon has had a spirit guide that she's known all her life. She's been psychic all her life. But now she is channeling John the Baptist. So for your listeners, John is John the Baptist. And he has already dictated a book that I will write. We're titling John the Baptist today, where he's going to tell his own story.
Mm-hmm.
But we are blessed, and John is thrilled that we are now together again. And he tells us how we all met and agreed in what he calls the pre-existence, like Rob Schwartz would talk about this,
mm-hmm.
to come and bring this message at this time, that the world is in bad shape. Mother Earth is in trouble, and we need to help. And so now we who have agreed are here and thrilled, both in the spirit dimension as well as here, to be able to work together. And so even when I speak at Live H2O in Long Beach,
uh-huh.
I will be speaking, but I've asked for Sharon to present with me, and John will channel as part of that event in Long Beach.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So Abraham came first in a great way, talking through Esther.
Right.
But you will hear about Sharon Bauer in a big way, channeling John the Baptist in this, and it's only next month, will be our first major public appearance, but it will be the first of many, many, and then we will have much more to write and say. So again, I would encourage your listeners to go to my website, deanschrock.com, and very soon thereafter, you will be referred to the other websites, Why Love Heals and heartfeltintent.com. And then at some point, because I'm so involved now with promoting Why Love Heals, I will stop and write John the Baptist today and we'll create yet another website where we'll make all of, we will actually have weekly messages from John that will be available through the website.
Oh, how wonderful. That's just great news.
Yeah.
My goodness, it's so exciting to see all of this actually happening.
Yeah.
You know, because you look into the world and you see, you know, the 3D illusion going on or crumbling, and yet, you know, here these things, these miraculous things are happening all around us, and they're just thrilling. I can't be more excited than to hear about this.
Yeah.
Are you going to what does John say, and what does your friend say? What were some of the questions you asked him, and what about what about 2012 and the Mayan calendar?
Oh yeah, and I apologize. You started there, and I digressed so much. I didn't really address that properly.
Oh, it was worth hearing. I'm glad you digressed.
Well, absolutely. Whether we call it a Mayan calendar or whomever has forecast and projected that there will be a major change, you know, astrologically, astronomically, whatever. We are already, of course, in that process. It's just by that time, you know, however, all of these energies come together and that process will be speeded up that much more. John does say that very clearly, that all of this is being speeded up a great deal at this time.
Uh-huh.
But he did say how this time was important, that this is happening, that people are going to be brought to their knees, that we have really forgotten who we are and our spiritual nature and have really turned so much toward greed that it was absolutely necessary for this time to happen for people to see that they had to make some major changes. But Barack Obama, for example, in the pre-existence, very much agreed to come along with many others who will show up and help to turn this around. And it's inevitable that this will get turned around, but it doesn't mean that there won't be more struggle until we realize that what we've been doing is not what we need to do.
Absolutely right. It's like we've been totally unconscious and disconnected from source, and throwing bones over our shoulder, and Niagara Falls is right in front of us, and we're in the barrel. It's truly frightening, you know, for so many people that are a little bit more awake or in the awakening process to see this going on. So your take on the being brought to the knees, it hasn't happened yet, has it?
It is happening. It's just that it might get worse yet before it gets better, but I honestly see where it looks like it's really starting to get better, but you know, we still have this crazy Middle East situation, and you know, Pakistan and China, and
the financial grip by the bankers and
the ruling elite.
I mean, my goodness!
But again, that had to happen because it was just so out of balance, so totally out of balance with the fundamental law of love,
which is the idea
of giving without any thought of anything in return.
Yeah.
And when you really think about investing or how banks work, it's invest the least possible for the greatest possible return.
Yeah.
And I remember even as a youngster having these thoughts and going, you know what, this isn't right. This can't work.
It's ludicrous what's happening in the financial industries.
Yeah. Well, the good news is it will change, but you know, like anything, they're not just going to, you know, lay down for you. They believe very, very strongly in what they're doing.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's very much opposed to, you know, this sense of love and harmony and cooperation. When you really understand what love really is, it's oneness, it's unity.
And what we do to ourselves or to someone else, we're doing to what we do to another, we're doing to ourselves.
Right. It's all connected.
Yeah. And everything is interconnected, and you can't separate any piece out. So that's a lesson that I think all of us are going to have to wake up and get pretty soon. Would you say then that there's, maybe this is a new agey term, but would you say that there's a divine plan that's in operation and moving into higher gear?
Yes, I would say that is absolutely true. And sometimes the term is used divine timing.
Timing,
that also not to, you know, think that, you know, it should go a certain way. Like I said, be careful what you pray for.
Right, right.
It's more, I have this, it's kind of a trite mantra, but it's like, I signed up, I show up, I shine my light.
Yeah.
And it's okay. I think I personally have a fairly good grasp of why I'm here.
Yeah.
And I'm fortunate now to be in a position in my life where I can let that really be my focus.
Yes.
But however people understand what fills their heart and makes them feel fulfilled and so forth, is just to do that.
Yes.
But
yes.
also to appreciate that when whatever we're thinking and feeling literally creates our reality, both for us as individuals and in our physical makeup, but also as an energy that goes out and affects everything else.
Yes, absolutely.
But in the end, you know, like we laughed about a little earlier, you know, what's cooler than the idea of follow your bliss and it's actually, you know, your doctor's prescription telling you this is what you need to do? Well, I will tell you, you know, I know a great deal about this now, in, both in terms of your health but also spiritually. But John is so clear about how you can't know love without knowing joy first. So that we need to really focus on joy, and that that he told me that that's why they helped me with that first book and first message, because it's instrumental to help people understand love.
Wow, that's very deep. That's really something. You know, that's something that was, that I need to just plaster all over my house here.
And but you know what? For what it's worth, It's not so simple, even though it sounds wonderful.
No, it
when
isn't.
I worked with these cancer patients and I was the one telling them as one of their doctors to go fishing, they wouldn't do it. They said it was too selfish. They've been so conditioned to believe that everyone or everything else comes first.
Mm-hmm.
So for what it's worth, it's not easy to institute because of the deep conditioning that this sounds selfish, but it is perfectly selfish in that it is what it is essential for your own well-being and the well-being of this planet.
Well, that's a wonderful message, Dr. Schrock, and we have to segue into the next show now.
Okay.
tell everybody what your website is again before we sign off.
Okay, Dean Schrock, DeanSHrock.com, and soon will be YLoveHeals.com and HeartFeltIntent.com. But for now, go to deanschrock.com and you will be referred to the others. But they will be up and running soon. We're in a major process of creating these new websites as well as changing my original. And you will be hearing a great deal more about Sharon Bauer and John the Baptist. And I will be out there doing what I can to help people know there's so much more they can do to help themselves and help others.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Dr. Schrock,
well,
and it's
you.
Been a wonderful chat.
Okay, thank you.
Many blessings to you, and good night to you and to all our wonderful listeners.
Okay, good night.
Okay, bye-bye.